more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Since Michael Pink came to Milwaukee Ballet more than a decade ago, he's made his mark with his powerful efforts to produce story ballets, works with a narrative storyline, including Peter Pan, La Boheme, and even Dracula. His latest, and the ballet's latest, is no exception. It's the world premiere of Mirror Mirror, a retelling and reimagining of the classic fairy tale Snow White. Lake Effect's Bonnie North met Pink at the ballet on a rehearsal break, and he said the production has long been in the works.
This one has been around a long time. 1999 was the first draft that I did in our little hamlet in Yorkshire, and I was writing down this story, and I thought, you know, interesting how to delve into this story of Snow White. We're always thinking about the evil stepmother and then Snow White, and I thought, let's try and investigate some way of this being a little bit more interesting. And I wanted also to explore why, where did the mirror come from, and why is the evil stepmother supposed to be evil? So the usual story, the usual questions that we ask ourselves. So I started work on that. It originally had lots of projection in it, lots of technology, lots of exciting things. And then over the years, instead of adding to that side of it, I withdrew. I started going backwards into, you know, let me take away technology. Let me just really get behind the story and use visual stimulus for me more than anything else. So 2005, I think I revisited it, and the synopsis that we have now has been evolving since that time. Philip Feeney, the composer from Dracula, Peter Pan, Esmeralda, I asked Philip to work with me again purely because it's a comfort factor for me. I can rely on Philip to be there to provide the world we need and to challenge the musicians and everybody. And so Philip has created a score that is actually quite different, because most of our previous work has been rooted in some sort of reality, whether it's been Dracula, and we've tried to create a realistic feel and look to that. This is very much more surreal in some respects. I wanted a production that would have fantasy costumes. Todd Ivins, who's a designer I've met when I worked on Cabaret at the Repertory Theatre, Todd is, and I have become good friends, good working colleagues, and I asked him to foray into the world of dance, and he's done a brilliant job of creating a surreal world in which we can tell this very interesting story. The David Grill, our lighting designer, who has now become a part of this organization, thank goodness. David is, of course, the man that does Super Bowl halftime. He does all of the major games. His real passion and love is with dance and theater. He creates the story with light. So people have always been, have noted the incredible detail within the lighting and how exciting it is. So that, again, becomes answers to something we've talked a lot about, which is that it takes a team. It takes a huge team to create anything at the ballet. And so there we have a fabulous team of creative artists. And then, of course, the costumes, the scenery, all of this has been made by Milwaukee Ballet. So the artisans that work at Milwaukee Ballet, Mary Peering, who runs our costume shop, has been working on this for 18 months. And an incredible team of people building these elaborate costumes. They're not run-of-the-mill things. They're not things you buy off the peg or you'd see. They needed to be created and stylized. The scenery, which is in some ways is minimalist, but strangely enough, when it all comes together, it looks rather complex. That's all been built by our fabulous workshop, which is here in town, local craftsmen, local technicians that work with us here. So again, I'm delighted that we have been able to source this here in Milwaukee, and this is truly something that is represents the depth of talent that we have here in this community.
So born in Yorkshire, but really come to fruition here.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. And I think I never put a time frame on any of the synopsis that I've written over my career. It just sits there on a shelf gathering dust until it falls off or the shelf collapses or something draws me back to it. And yeah, this felt like the right time to do this. And I think the confidence that the ballet has built over the last 10 years in terms of producing excellence on stage and quality for money. I mean, I hate to keep talking about money, but I want to be able to say to people in a very proud and accomplished way that we're spending very, very few dollars on producing these productions, but the quality is $1 million. So I'm thrilled that really we found an opportunity to make a production like Mirror Mirror work on the stage, and it is working. It's quite spectacular. There are many, many things about the production that I think are interesting. The backstory, we call the backstory, is the mirror. where did the mirror come from? So I created a backstory where there is an idyllic community that's built around an apple orchard. So it represents growth and life and the seasons. And
an Eden, almost.
Eden, yes. Thank you. Good. Well done, Bonnie. Can always rely on you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, there's real depth to this story. And Beatrice, who's this beautiful young woman with her husband, Joseph, she sat under a tree, and lo and behold, this falling star falls from the heavens into her lap. And when she looks into the fallen star, she can not only see her own reflection, but she can see into the future. And she lifts it up and she asks, when will she be with child? And the mirror tells her, before the next harvest, she'll be with child. And we see this passage of time in which she has her baby, and then the passage of time becomes a young Snow White. And then we introduce the stepmother-to-be, who covets the mirror. She's heard. Everybody's heard about this magic mirror, and who wouldn't want a mirror that could tell the future and would tell you you're the fairest of them all? And so that, for me, gives the whole production this backstory that I think is so powerful, because now we know what the game is. We know what the objective of Claudia, who is the stepmother. She wants this mirror. And as in all good Shakespearean dramas, we've got to have all this intrigue. And so Claudia comes to town. She seduces the bereaved husband. Snow White, of course, the rest of the story is the same. She's not happy with this arrangement. And we watch Claudia slowly manipulate every person in the community who will be one step closer to her, not only gaining the mirror, but also becoming the almighty and the powerful. She'll take over, and she'll use everybody. So she'll seduce the father of the prince, as he would be referred to. She will seduce him and make him the assassin. So you have this wonderful intrigue plot. As with all my work, it can be as complex on paper as we like, but it has to work visually without words in the theater. Is it appropriate for children? As soon as you mention something that's slightly dark, it always, always, always amuses me that people suddenly think we have to protect all of our children from this. And I'm going, just a minute. Let's look at the many versions. Let's look at that first Disney version of it. It's pretty dark and it's pretty frightening. And you know what? I mean, I have kids with healthy imaginations. They would beat me about the head if I didn't give them that level of dark intrigue and excitement that kids just thrive on.
Well, all fairy tales start out that way. My goodness, none of them are light and fluffy. They're morality tales, and they are allegories, and they're all kinds of things to kind of teach kids what the world is like.
And that's exactly it. And as we know, I mean, before they were sanitized and made fairy tales, they were folk tales, and all of those folk tales had birds pecking eyes out and feet being chopped off and babies drowned in rivers. It was always about, as you say, all the morality. And I think this production will give you lots of that. And I think children are blessed with seeing things through the lens of their eyes. So we mustn't superimpose our prejudices, our fears, our knowledge on our children, especially in nonverbal theater. They're not going to hear offensive language. They're not going to be contaminated by the aggressive use of language. They're just going to sit and watch nonverbal theater with spectacular music, with amazing costumes, fabulous lighting, on a very large stage. So there's a distance. It's not right in front of their face. And I think children will always, always take away from my productions things that really work for them and their imagination.
I was going to ask you, have you had trouble before with people saying this is too dark for kids?
Not really trouble. I think one is people, again, adults are always so cautious. And again, talk about morality. They're always trying to think we have to protect children from various things. The world of dance, as my world of dance, you don't need to protect children. You need to let children be able to make that have the access to it and experience in a certain way. And remember, the Milwaukee Ballet has a very large school, which is here in the building that we work in. And the kids see it all the time. They see it through the window in the studio. They come and sit in the studio. The children are a part of it. There are children in the production. So I think it's Snow White. For children, it will tell the story of Snow White. And I think with the backstory of the falling star, and now we know what Claudia, the stepmother, is trying to achieve here, I think people will feel, oh, I understand a little bit more about Snow White. And it ends happily. There's a happy ending.
I find that the whole idea of beauty and that whole, the fairy tale, of course, deals with that. But I love the idea of exploring that in a non, maybe stereotypical way, where, as you say, ugliness is represented specifically, directly, you know, that we can be beautiful and ugly at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think that's ultimately very powerful, because how many times have we, on face value, have we made a judgment? And of course, with the way that we are subjected to the representation of what is beauty in the female form with the commercial world we live in, and when we see posters that have been airbrushed and digitized or whatever it is, photoshopped, it's fighting that image, that the first image of a beautiful person is something that everybody either wants to be or wants to have. And it's only once you get to delve deeper and know that person that the true color is revealed. And I think what's beautiful about this production is that I think there will be people in the audience who will probably not want to accept the fact that she's evil. She's just slightly misguided, or there's, you know, we'll try and justify, because the fact is she is so beautiful. So do we want to destroy beauty? No, we don't. But on the other hand, beauty can be very difficult. It's like some of the most exotic flowers. They are exotic, beautiful to look at, but probably not wise that you either smell them or eat them. You know, they could represent something more, the beauty of a rose that has the prickly thorn. So Sleeping Beauty, all of those allegories that I think represent beauty is dangerous. Beauty is dangerous. It's dangerous to have it, and it's dangerous to be subjected to it.
And it's also fleeting.
Totally fleeting, which is why the seasonal aspect of this is that a flower grows and it withers and dies, and it's that representation of the life cycle that I think is so important, and why I wanted it to be an apple orchard, because it feels that the apple, which is, as you rightfully said, is the Garden of Eden, it's temptation, and why would Snow White take an apple from a total stranger, because unless she felt that this was something that she had trust and comfort with, and the apple represents that. So we see her at the very beginning collecting apples with her father, and how familiar she is when she's in her secret garden with Gustav, who is her long time friend and will become the prince in inverted commas. An apple falls from the tree into her hand, and so it feeds the two of them. It feeds their love. It brings them together. She has the greatest trust in the apple. So when a beautiful woman in an exotic, wonderfully yellow coat arrives and said, here, little girl, you should have an apple, and it turns out to be the poison apple, it's quite believable that she would have taken it.
So what do you hope, once the production is here, are you hoping to take it out now?
Bonnie, I'm always, always, always hopeful that the productions that we create here in Milwaukee will have a life beyond here. And largely because I think I do create productions that are different from other ballet companies, and I do think that audiences respond well to them. They have the power to entice people to come to the ballet that otherwise wouldn't. They really do have the power to create a new audience. And my productions that have enjoyed performances in Washington and Colorado and Atlanta and other places all report good audience attendance, which is good. It reflects in the box office. So I'm hoping, again, that these productions, which are designed to move efficiently, they pack into one large lorry, which, you know, thinks, why is that important? That's important because it costs a lot of money to ship things around the country. So they're designed to be practical and help other companies to be able to stage them. As to getting people to come here and experience them in order to become interested and say, wow, I need to put that on my company, that's another story, because strangely enough, most ballet companies in this country tend to perform their various series around about the same time. So the amount of people I phone up and say, come to Milwaukee, come see the production, we'll look after you, we'll even give you beer and brats if that's what you want. No, I can't, because I'm performing that weekend, or we have something going on. So it's always very difficult. So we're relying on video representation to sell these products. Well, you and I know you miss a major part of anything when it's on video. You don't have that emotional response to being in the space and feeling the people around you, which again is why live theatre is, you'll never replace live theatre. It's that audience participation part of it that really helps enforce the way you feel about the work.
Michael Pink, as always, such a pleasure to talk to you, and best of luck with the new production.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Michael Pink is artistic director of the Milwaukee Ballet. The world premiere of Mirror, Mirror opens tomorrow night with music by Pink's longtime collaborator, composer Philip Feeney, some of which we're hearing now. It runs through Sunday at the Marcus Center's Eline Hall. He spoke with Bonnie North. What if Hamlet took place not just in the 16th century, but also billions of years in the future? Seriously, what if? A new movie seeks to answer that burning question, and we'll hear about it when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.